Welcome to AFS Beneath the Surface, the podcast of the American Fisheries Society. I'm your host and AFS staff member, Lauren Meza. Today's podcast topic isn't directly related to fisheries management, but it was one of the first topics that was suggested when I started floating the idea of starting the podcast. This episode was recorded in person during the World Fisheries Congress in Seattle. And since we were at a meeting, I thought it would be a great time to chat about conferences and meeting planning with Sean Johnston and Carol Dunsmore. I am sitting here with Sean Johnston and Carol Dunsmore, and we're going to geek out a little bit about meetings for a bit, and I will have you guys introduce yourselves for everybody knows you, but just tell us who you are and why I've called upon you to do this.
I'm Sean Johnston. I'm the meetings director for American Fisheries Society. I've been with American Fisheries Society since 2007.
And I'm Carol Dunsmore. I'm a consulting meeting planner. I do work with American Fisheries Society, the Wildlife Society, and the American Society of Mammalogists.
So here's a question that a lot of members, and actually even a couple of vendors this week have asked me, like, how do you come up with which cities the meetings are going to be in? And I know that you could probably talk for a couple hours about site selection and what all goes into it. So just, I guess, basic high level, when you all are looking for a site to hold a meeting, how does the process start? And particularly in AFS's case, like who all is involved in that decision making and how far out do we book? You can share as much or as little as you like.
Yeah, so what we do is with AFS, we try to do a counterclockwise rotation of the U.S. And when that starts, we start with a RFI, so that's a request for information. It's a two-step process. The second one is a request for proposal. So once the venue knows that we're interested, we'll ask for information and details. And then once it's approved, it could narrow that down to like your top three and then do a request for proposal. So at that point, they know you're more serious. You can ask for concessions and discounts and make things a little bit more budget-friendly.
If I could just add on to what Sean said, I think for societies this size, pre-COVID, it was pretty common to book about 4 years out. And then during and just emerging from COVID, in some cases, you know, that was not quite the full 4 years, but it's definitely back to, for a meeting of this size, needing to book at least 4 years out. Some of the other factors that go into the decision-making process, the industry term we use is lift, but that is just like how many flights and major airlines fly into that city on a daily basis. What percentage of your attendees would have to be changing planes versus being able to fly direct? The room rate, you know, your hotel room rate, proximity of hotels to convention space. I picked up this term from somebody else, the dining narrative, you know, like how many restaurants, bars, coffee shops are walkable from the convention space. You know, all those factors go into the decision-making process. Some city XYZ could have a fantastic deal, but if it's in the middle of nowhere and they don't have a big airport, they don't have any restaurants, we're not going to source that destination.
And then Carol had a really, really good point about the different items and concessions you're looking for. So what AFS has is an 86-point checklist. So that gives a 1 to 5 point score for each category. Like Carol was mentioning, how close you are to an airport, if there's restaurants in the area, attractions, how long does it take to get to the airport, things like that. So that total score you can work, total that up, and then have the other facilities pretty much negotiate against each other.
Another key factor that goes into the decision-making is how many members do we have in that part of the country, right? I mean, you know, Pacific Northwest, for AFS and for the Wildlife Society, every time we're up here, massive meetings because we have tons of members up here.
That actually leads really well into another question, which is certainly everybody sees Sean running around all day long, but how many people behind the scenes are helping to put all this together? Who all gets involved from the vendor standpoint, from the volunteer standpoint? Take us behind the scenes and tell us who all is helping you make all of this magic come together.
So the behind the scenes list is pretty big. So we start out with a program team. There's a planning team. Then with scheduling, we have Carol as a contractor for us. We have exhibit sales. We have person handling visa approval letters. The list is long. Lauren handles all the plenaries and... then we have staff that are helping organize rooms, and we plan rooms for governing board meetings. So the list is huge. So to give you an exact number, I wouldn't be sure because there's so many people involved. We also have the local teams that help out, spawning run staff, Then there's people to handle the auction, the sponsorships, helping with that, the local team helping with booth sales. So the list is pretty long.
And then once we're on site, there are various other behind-the-scenes teams that make things happen. So the hotel or convention space will have their team. AFS typically does travel with an audiovisual team that's been doing our meetings for years. So that's another 8-ish people. Trade show decorator. So when we use the word decorator, we don't mean flowers and pretty colors. But, you know, the company that puts up the pipe and drape for the booths and the poster boards, that's another entire crew of people. And then depending on the size of the meeting, we depend heavily on volunteers as well to work registration and various things. That could be another 30 people right there. So it's a pretty big team of people behind the scenes. And one thing that attendees might not know is everybody that's here like has a real specific role. And when we come together and do all those roles is what kind of creates the meeting. And I'll be reminded of that sometimes when our office is usually right next door to the speaker upload room, and we'll have people come in and ask AV questions. And I'm like, wow, that's the kind of questions they're troubleshooting next door. You know, I mean, it really does require a lot of different disciplines and areas of expertise to make it run. And patience, you're right.
You guys have been involved in fisheries and wildlife related meetings for a long time. Is there anything specific to this field that you think is unique in the meeting side, or is a wildlife meeting the same as a medical meeting, the same as a, obviously not the same as Comic-Con, but do you see the same kind of problems across the boards, the same kind of issues across the boards, or is this a very unique audience, I guess is my question.
I'll say a two-part answer. One that's very specific and logistic and more, and another one that's just a little more big picture. So one thing that's very specific about scientific meetings is the size of our poster halls. Most other conferences, corporate and pharma and all that, like, it's all the big general session, maybe a couple breakouts. But when we tell venues that we need room for like 100 double-sided poster boards, that's very unique to this business. And it requires us to need usually an entire additional exhibit space. So that's one thing that's like super specific about scientific meetings that makes us need more space and more rentals than other meetings. And the other thing I would just mention is there's meetings pre-COVID and there's meetings post-COVID, you know. And so in the last 2 years, the cost of most things at a conference has gone up about 40% over the last 2 years. And so we are still trying to put on the same, if not higher caliber meetings that we always did, while trying to keep the attendee price as low as humanly possible. So that's just like probably the biggest challenge like facing our industry right now. Some of those other industries, corporate and pharma, for example, they can charge or not charge whatever they want because they have just insane pockets of money. But when you're talking about scientific societies and people that travel approval is hard enough as it is, you know, that's kind of one of the big changes, I think.
It's definitely a seller's market now. So with the size of the AFS meeting, we're really limited on the number of locations that we can go to with needing 32 meeting rooms. So those aren't all concurrent sessions, of course, but we have, like Carol mentioned, the AV loading room, there's a staff office, there's the mother's room. So there's a whole bunch of additional rooms that are added in there. And like Carol said, we don't have the same budget as a medical company. That seems to be the costs are just like astronomical. When you tell somebody a gallon of coffee is $125, they look at you like, you've got to be kidding. There's no way. But that really is what it is. So the facilities will give you discounted rentals or maybe even free, but they're factoring in what you're going to spend in food and beverage. Like, for instance, a single meatball at the reception is like
$7. Plus tax and service fee.
Yes, and a 31% service fee. And that's not something you can negotiate. That's a set fee. And that's not a tip that goes to the help. That's just an added cost. So the cost for an event adds up really quickly. Just for instance, we had somebody in Grand Rapids that we gave a cup to at registration, and he's like, this is what I get for $700. You know, I was trying to explain to him that, you know, there's all of the costs, like Carol was saying about the decorators, the AV company. So when you see something like that, it's really expensive and the money goes very quick.
What percentage of the meeting industry has come back post-COVID? Because you've talked about, kind of mentioned that briefly in passing. So has it changed completely? Do you feel like you're back to where you were pre-COVID, or is this just a totally different landscape?
I feel like the meetings industry has 100% rebounded from COVID, maybe even more. I mean, when we're looking at things like site selection and booking vendors and stuff, people are booked. I mean, it's thriving. I think one of the specific, you know, post-COVID challenges that we're seeing a lot of is where do societies come down on that decision to still include virtual or hybrid content at the conference? So there was a good 2-3 year period there where we had to, at the very minimum, be hybrid, but in some cases full virtual. And a lot of meetings, especially those with international audiences, still want to provide that hybrid option. A lot of attendees just think that that should be free. But a lot of times we actually have to source, you know, like a software company to like provide that content. And you might go to a lot of staff time and a lot of money to provide that to see 13 people log on. And so then you really have to evaluate, like, is that long-term a good decision for the society? So I think that's one of those lingering things that's still with us from COVID. But as far as business, the meetings industry's 100% back.
So share one, maybe two fun stories that have happened at recent AFS or Wildlife Society meetings that your average attendee would never have guessed would happen. Something crazy that's happened behind the scenes.
Okay, I'll tell one funny story while Sean thinks of one, and then we'll go back and forth. This was not too recent. This was like 2009, but it's one of my favorite stories that's ever happened at a meeting. The Wildlife Society was in Monterey, California, which back then would have been great for AFS too, but now we're all too big for it. But we're at the Portola Plaza Hotel, which is a lovely independent hotel in Monterey. And at the time, and I don't know if this is different, they didn't have air conditioning because they don't usually need it. So you usually have your windows open. And somebody asked the front desk, is there any way you can get those dogs to stop barking? And she said, those aren't dogs. Those are sea lions. And no. But that was also one of my favorite conference destinations of all time. It was a very special place. Okay, another funny favorite animal-related conference story. I was doing the IMC 13 in Anchorage, Alaska. So this was the International Mammalogical Congress. So a bunch of mammal biologists, and we're out at the Alaska Native Heritage Center for this beautiful diversity social, and we had like local tribespeople speaking and local food, just this fabulous event. And we said, gosh, the only thing that would make this better is if, you know, if a mammal just like showed up. And within minutes, this baby black bear right on cue. And everybody asked me, how much did you have to pay for that?
Okay, Sean, if you have no fun animal stories, what has been your favorite city to host a meeting in?
Actually, one of my favorite cities was Atlantic City. We were able to do a beach party. I mean, I know it's all scientific, and that's the main purpose of the meeting, but the socials are a lot of fun for the attendees after being in meetings all day. So we had the pier right on the boardwalk, and we were able to get these great deals all with Atlantic City for the room block, and then also for the social events, and then for the grand networking event, we had Bally's Beach Bar set up for food and buffets. And then when that was over, we had fireworks on the beach, and we were able to get all of that free from the convention center as a perk on coming there. So that was a lot of fun, and I think we'd have a hard time trying to beat that social, but we do try all the time. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
You know, this is not going to be a surprise to anyone, but both Alaska and Hawaii top out the list for me. Anchorage, Alaska was an amazing city for a conference. I mean, it was in the summertime, so that was fabulous. But also the Hilton Waikoloa Village on the Kona side of the Big Island. Both of those were just real unique experiences. And I feel like when you're in some of those destinations, a lot more people do pre and post trips, bring families. Like, it just ends up being such a experience that, yeah, I mean, not surprisingly, those two are up there. Another thing I love, though, is when I'm pleasantly surprised by a destination that I don't have a lot of expectations for. And so every once in a while when that happens, it's like, oh, you know, I don't know a lot about the Midwest other than working. Like, I've never lived in any of those states. And sometimes when you have a conference, it's like, oh, like, Milwaukee had, like, all these great things about it, or, you know, that you just wouldn't know. So part of that is just a part of the meetings industry that I like, is being able to explore those destinations that maybe don't always get as much love as Alaska and Hawaii. But yes, Alaska and Hawaii technically are my favorites.
So before I let you go, anything else, any words of wisdom to future attendees, anybody who's thinking about trying to host a meeting, anything else I haven't asked that you think members might find interesting or insightful before I let you go?
Yeah, so we'll have members ask a question like, why aren't we going to Boston or Manhattan or things like that? So the hotel industry has a tier system. So like Seattle's considered a tier one, and then you'll get, you know, New York and Boston, Las Vegas, San Francisco. And those tiers are pretty important because you know by the different levels of what they're going to charge for room rates and convention centers and things like that. So it's a whole calculation you got to put together to see how much food and beverage is going to cost. What are the room blocks going to like? Is this going to be attractive to attendees? We've always tried to keep the room rates under or right around $199, but with this seller's market, it's becoming more and more difficult to find a property that still fits in your budget.
And I'll just add one comment to each part of the question. So one comment just for attendees in general is, you know, when you see on your conference website the recommended or the host hotel, it really is important to us that, if at all humanly possible, that you do book in that hotel block. A lot of the benefits that we get, whether it's complimentary meeting space or discounts on food or AV or things like that, are based on us filling a certain number of hotel rooms. So it really is important to the meeting that you do book in that host hotel. It also is really a lot better for your attendee experience because you're going to run into all of your colleagues in the restaurants, in the common spaces, in the coffee shop line, things like that. And for those of you that are thinking about hosting meetings, and I hope Sean would agree with this, the proposal you get from your hotel or conference center, that's your starting point. Don't ever just get a contract and sign it right away. Like, that's your starting point. Really take a read through that and see if there's anything that you're like, oh, I really wish we could have this. Ask for it. The worst they can say is no. But, like, always take that initial proposal as kind of like their starting offer. They're not going to give you things unless you ask for it.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun and a non-fishy topic to talk about for a little bit. Yeah, and I think you've given AFS members new things to think about when they're attending their next conference, so I really appreciate it. I will let you go because we still have a half a day of World Fisheries Congress to go. So thank you.
It's time for AFS On the Clock. Updates in 60 seconds or less. Since we've been talking about meetings today, let's start with updates about the Honolulu annual meeting. Registration is now open for the meeting, as are the hotel blocks. Abstract submissions for this conference close on April 26th. You can find all the information on the annual meeting on our website. The AFS election closes on April 26th. If you are an AFS member, please remember to cast your vote in the next week. AFS is recruiting webinar presenters for upcoming sessions. If you have research or a topic that can be shared with the AFS membership in an hour-long online format, we would love to set something up with you. Contact information is included in the show notes. Please reach out. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please feel free to share this with your colleagues and subscribe for updates. We're available on major podcast hosting platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Also, as always, feel free to share your comments with AFS staff members. We'll see you next time on AFS Beneath the Surface.